Hey everyone, welcome back to the Intelligent Conversations podcast. Today I have the honor to learn from Dr. John DeGarmo. Dr. DeGarmo is the leading international foster care expert and consultant. He and his family have won multiple awards such as Good Morning America Ultimate Hero, Citizens of the Year, and that's just to name a few. Dr. DeGarmo and his wife have been a foster parent to over 60 children over the years that he's been in the system. So, Dr. DeGarmo, thank you for coming on. I look forward to learning from you, and I know the audience does as well. But just kind of a good starting point to kind of ask, how did you get started with this? I mean, I kind of listed your accomplishments, but I'm kind of curious, what kind of put you on the path to start down that pathway? What was the starting point for you?
Well, it was never a path that I wanted to walk down. It was never a path I thought about traveling down. It was only after the death of our first child where I recognized how precious life is and how valuable family is. So my wife was from Australia. We moved back to the United States from Australia. And then we had three healthy children after that. And I started teaching in a rural high school, where I watched a lot of kids come through my classroom who had issues of attendance, behavior, and academics. There was a huge child sex trafficking incident where I was teaching, the Nawabian Nation, led by Dr. Malachi York. And if your listeners are not familiar with it, they should do a search on it. It is a fascinating and riveting yet horrific story of human trafficking, child sex trafficking. So all of that led to me saying, you know what, how can I help these kids? How can I help more children? We lost our first child. How can we help the kids in my classroom? How can we help kids in this area that we're living in who might have experienced and fell under this Nawabian Nation? So that led to us becoming foster parents to over 60-plus children. That led to my doctorate. That led to several books I've written, working with legislators. And I'm really driven every single day, if you see in my TED Talk, to make the system better, not just for the kids, but for the foster parents, for the birth parents, and for everybody in society.
Exactly. And I got a chance to walk. It's so cool. I think that's such a cool thing to get into. I watched your TED Talk. You kind of alluded to that. And the story about Sydney, that was wow. That really just, I think a lot of people could benefit from that. And just to kind of help the audience out a little bit, could you kind of just give a brief summary about that story?
Sure. Thanks for asking. So as a young girl came to our house, placed in our home from foster care. She was 7 years of age at the time. We had her for almost 2 years of age. I'm sorry, almost 2 years long. Now I need to preface it by saying when a child is placed into a foster care home like my own, and for thousands of others across the country, they're not a foster child. They are a part of a family. You know, there's no label in my house. There's no biological. There's no adoptive. There's no foster. They're all my children, and they're members of my family, and as such, we love them each unconditionally. So she was very much a member of a family, and we were in the process of hopefully trying to adopt her. And then we had very, very little notice. I won't spoil the TED Talk, but we had very little notice. And she was removed from our home and placed with an aunt and uncle in another state whom she'd only met once in her life. And suddenly, without really any warning whatsoever. And sadly, she became a victim of child sex abuse and ended up in a children's mental health hospital. Very, very terrible story. Very terrible story. It's not a pleasant one whatsoever. It's a story how the system failed. Child. And so that drives me every single day not to let that happen to any child again.
I love that. I think it's so cool. I think that, you know, some of those, like the story that you shared with Sydney, I think those stories, like, yeah, it's a really bad thing that happens, but then it almost helps us. Like I have this saying where when you encounter challenges, it sucks in the moment, but then that's the greatest learning opportunity. And I imagine you learned as well, and you're like, I'm not gonna let this happen ever again,
right?
And I think that's so cool that you did that. So you kind of alluded to a little bit of maybe some of the problems that are maybe with the system right now. Can you just kind of share, like, for someone that doesn't even know, maybe perhaps some of the problems that exist with this system?
Sure. You know, there are so many myths and misconceptions that are associated with foster care. And I'll be honest, I believe those myths. I believe those misconceptions before I became a foster parent. The misconception that the kids are bad kids. No, they're not. They're victims of abuse. They're victims of neglect. They're victims of abandonment, victims of trauma. The foster parents are weird people. The vast majority of foster parents are good-hearted people who simply want to help children. So the problem with the system is you're seeing more children coming into the system, whether it's because of the open borders under the current administration. Children are just flooding over the border. So many of them are victims of human trafficking. They're brought over here as victims of human trafficking. We have 800,000 children, some studies will indicate that are missing in our nation. So those kids are coming over the border. Where are they? Most likely human trafficking. 300,000 children, victims of human trafficking in our nation. 5 million children experience domestic violence in their house every year. So we have these children flooding a new foster care system. In addition, there's also the opiate epidemic. You know, when the parents are addicted to opiates, where do the children go? When the parents are incarcerated to their opiate addiction, where do the children go? When the parents die, where do they go? They're flooding into a foster care system that can't handle it. There are more children coming in, but there are not enough foster parents. Agencies today are overworked, overwhelmed, under-resourced, under-supported, understaffed, and underpaid. So your average caseworker is much like your average foster parent. In the last maybe about 18 to 22 months, and then they say, I'm out of here. I quit. This is such a hard thing to do. And it is hard. Foster parenting, it's been the most rewarding thing I've ever done. It's been the most challenging thing I've done as well. Because when you have a child come to your home who is a victim of neglect, abuse, trauma, yeah. They may have issues of trust. They may have issues of attachment. They may have some anger management issues, whatever it might be. But they're children who are wanting someone to love them and want to live in a normal type of environment. But the problem is more kids coming in, not enough foster parents to care for these children. As a result, agencies are overwhelmed with children and not enough places for them to go.
Wow. Yeah, that's a massive problem. So kind of naturally to ask this, it's how do we then increase the number of foster parents? So I see this coming out as two ways. How do we either increase the number of foster parents or how do we decrease the amount of kids going in to the system in the first place? It's kind of the two questions there.
You know, again, when you have 5 million children who witness or experience domestic violence in their house every year, that number needs to be decreased. Let's step back a few years ago. 2020, when the world panicked over COVID, and we shut down schools and we place these children because we are afraid these children are going to come down with a virus. The reality was these children are being trapped in their homes with an abuser with no one to see them. You know, for so many children, for millions of children in our nation, those 5 million children who experience domestic violence inside their house by somebody who is a parental figure, these children are no longer going to an environment that's going to be safe. School is their safe spot. School is a place where they're not going to be hurt, raped. They're going to get 2 meals a day. They're going to be protected. They're going to see a teacher who's a mandated reporter who can lay eyes upon them and see evidence of some type of abuse and report it. That did not happen in 2020. So we locked these children home with their abuser, and so many of them were further abused or even died. So we have to start in the home to be sure to get those families that type of support system and help they can that they need so they don't abuse their children. But in regards to foster parenting, we need to have a lower ratio between caseworkers and foster parents. So the caseworkers have more time instead of all the paperwork they have to do, all the court appearances, visitation, whatever it might be, have less of that so they can provide more support to foster parents. We did a study at the Foster Care Institute where we surveyed about 5,000 foster parents and asked them, hey, why are you quitting after about 18 months? By far, response was, we don't have enough support. We don't feel we get the support when a child leaves our house and we're grieving, we're heartbroken, when we are burned out, when we're stressed, and we're suffering something known as compassion fatigue or known as secondary traumatic stress. So we need to lower that ratio between caseworkers and foster parents to give them the help they need. When a child does go back home, which is known as reunification, and about 50% of kids in foster care do go back home, we need to make sure those families get the wraparound support services they need so they can continue to care for that child. The reality is when a child goes back home, the support services by child welfare usually end. They usually end so they can move on to another family. sadly, 20 to 30% of those kids who go back home come back into care because their families weren't ready yet. Or maybe they sink back into their addictions. Or maybe the stress of caring for the child is too much. Or maybe abuse happens again. And the children come back into care far more traumatized, filled with far more anxiety, and need much more help. So if we can give those families wraparound services when the children go back, if we can provide wraparound services before they go into foster care, and if we can lower the ratio of caseworkers to foster parents, we're going to make a start. In addition, you know, the government can't handle it by itself. So I'm seeing many churches and faith-based organizations around the nation recognize, hey, we don't have to go outside the country to find a mission field when the mission field is in our community, when the mission field is in our nation. When we have 5 million kids experiencing domestic violence in their house, when we have 300,000 children victims of human trafficking, when we have roughly 455,000 children in the foster care system, that means it's in every single community, in every single neighborhood in our nation. So faith-based organizations are starting to recognize, hey, we can play a part in this as well. We can help these kids. We can help the foster parents. We can help the birth parents in a number of ways. So there's a few suggestions that we can make the system a better one.
Yeah, I like those suggestions, especially I think with how you noted church. I think that's a very viable option because usually there's people donating into that, and then they can even specify saying, hey, do you think you could maybe set aside this money for this or something like that, or even charities. I think that will go a long way to do that.
And they
that.
Can provide and school supplies to the kids when they're in the care. They can provide hygiene items when they go into care. They can provide clothing. They can help the foster parents with meals. They can help the foster parents during holidays with Christmas gifts and things like that. They can be mentors and tutors. There's many ways churches can be involved without necessarily being a foster parent themselves.
I agree. Yeah, that's a great point there. I think I love how you talked about the support system that's needed, because I'm assuming, I don't know much, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming you were raised with a great support like system. And then I as well have a great support system. Like even if I had, let's say, parents that were just not that great, I would have aunts, uncles, grandparents that are great people as well. Most like what you're talking about, some of those kids just don't have access to that. And eventually the cycle repeats too. So then they end up having a kid and it's just, they never get out of that cycle. And it's kind of heartbreaking. And
it does. Yeah. Their cycle does repeat itself. For so many kids, it's generational. It goes from one generation to the next. Parents were abused. They abuse your children because they don't have any help. They don't have support. They weren't taught earlier. They didn't get the therapy or counseling services that they needed when they were getting hurt. To be sure, that's what happens, right?
Yeah, and it's terrible. And I mean, I love the what you're doing and stuff. So I think how do you have time then to do that? Because it's like you said, it's hard work, it's challenging, and I think some people, they already have enough with their kids as it is, and they're like, man, how do I actually step into this role and provide someone that may be, you know, is having some trouble and have problems that I don't even know what the heck to, like, how to solve it.
You know, foster parenting is a unique lifestyle. You got a child in your house 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, who has experienced trauma, who has issues of trust, who has issues of attachment, may have sleep anxieties, eating disorders, anger management disorders, has been abandoned, whatever it might be, raped horrifically, whatever it might be. It's a unique lifestyle, and foster parents make sacrifices of their time for these children. You know, my wife and I, 2 full-time jobs. We've had as many as 11 kids in the house at the same time. It's really, for us, it's just a decision. We're going to help these children. Is it sacrificing some things? Okay. Sure. But, you know, we're here to help kids. But at the same time, not everybody can be a foster parent. I understand that. Not everybody can be a foster parent. It is challenging. It's rewarding, but everybody can help in some way. But to answer your question, how do you make the time? Well, it's a priority for us. And so for so many people, you know, that's their priority, is to help children in crisis. Because if we won't, then who will? These aren't goods and services. I talk to legislators all the time. And I'm telling them, you know, I was talking to a legislator the other day in Georgia. They're spending a great deal of discussion and money talking about blowing leaves off the side of the Capitol. And I said, you know what? What's the real issue here? Is it blowing leaves off the Capitol or a child who is being abused at this very moment? So it's priorities.
Exactly. And yeah, it. I like that comparison you made. Sometimes we get so caught up in the some of the random things that, yeah, we probably do need to take care of that. But like, how about we actually try and solve some of the like more complex problems that, you know, face society? And if we don't do that, then, you know, like we kind of talked about earlier, the cycle's just going to keep repeating and nothing's going to change. So kind of on that, what kind of work then are you doing in the legislative, like what type are you like, I'm kind of curious how that would work. I don't know much about like the system in general, just to kind of put that out there, but like, what are you kind of doing to, I guess, improve it and that type of thing?
Well, I'm doing a number of things. I'm working on my 12th book right now. This one is with Jen Lilly. She's a celebrity actress. She used to be in Hallmark movies. She's with GAC now. She's also a foster parent herself, an adoptive parent. We've been to Washington, D.C. advocating, working on a book right now. I travel the nation and globe working with child welfare agencies, training staff, training social workers, training foster parents, providing resources, a lot of writing. When it comes to legislators, I feel that awareness equals advocacy. When they become aware of what the reality of these things, which was the focus of my TED Talk, I wanted to bring awareness. I wanted to show what it's like for these children. I want to show what it's like for foster parents. So people have their hearts opened up and recognize, oh my gosh, I didn't know this is happening where I live. How can I help? So awareness equals advocacy. So when I'm working with legislators, first of all, I'm trying to bring awareness so they can become better advocates. We're working to reform the system a number of ways. How to get more foster parents, how to increase retention so they don't quit, how to help the reunification process so then they do go home, they have that support services in place. Now, those are a few things we're doing here.
I think it's really cool what you're doing. And to your point, if no one does it, then who will? And we need people like you. So I guess kind of for maybe some of the people that they're just like, you know what, like I want to help, but it's just, I can't, like, there's just no way. Maybe they have other things that's just in the way. They just can't do it. What are some ways that they can maybe help out and maybe contribute? So then some of these problems we've been talking about, the pressure and some of the problems can be just kind of eased. The problems are not as big and they're easier to, I guess, I'm trying to find the right word. Sorry. What can the everyday person do to kind of help contribute so then the problem's not as big as it is today? That was what I was
Well, first of
for.
All, become aware it's happening where they live and stop denying it. I call human trafficking America's ugly secret. 300,000 kids in America, victims every year. It's tremendous moneymaker, if you will. It's a business. Human trafficking is very much a business. And again, more kids coming over the border. But we don't want to address it because it makes us feel uncomfortable. That's why I call it America's ugly secret. We don't want to address what's happening at the border. It makes us feel uncomfortable. We want to don't address it, what's happening in our own cities. It makes us feel uncomfortable. Maybe within our own family, we don't want to address child abuse or sexual predators is happening. It makes us feel uncomfortable, so we ignore it. So first of all, we need to become aware. And then there's so many things we can do if we can't be a foster parent. I think back to the time where we had a sibling group of five children show up at our house. Their home had no running water, no plumbing, no food, no electricity. You couldn't see the counters or the floor in the house because they're covered with human and dog feces. No father figure in the house. Mom was running a meth lab with her two teenage boyfriends. When the children came to our house, the clothing they had was not only contaminated by meth and human dog feces, but they were stapled together, clothing stapled together. And that happens everywhere, sadly. So yeah. We can help by, if someone can't be a foster parent, you know what, maybe I can provide brand new clothing for the children in my community. Call up their child welfare agency and say, hey, you know, tell me about some of the age groups and some of the genders for the kids in foster care. Can I help by donating clothes? So many of the kids in foster care have never experienced a birthday. I think back to the 10-year-old child in our house who we sang him happy birthday. He didn't know the words because no one had ever sung them before. Wow. Can you imagine? Can you imagine no one at 10 years of age, no one singing them happy birthday? How tragically heartbreaking that is. So we make birthdays huge for these children because it could be the very first time they've had a birthday or the first time they've celebrated a Christmas or the first time they've opened up a wrapped gift. So maybe there's children in your community you can help with gifts for birthdays and Christmas and other holidays. You can contact your child welfare agency and say, you know what, how can I help? Because many times that money, even though foster parents get a per diem, it's generally small. So for most foster parents, we're digging out of our own wallets and we are using our own money to buy these kids the gifts that they deserve. And that's fine. I have no problem doing that. I don't expect a reimbursement on that because this is my family member, right? So maybe we can provide gifts on Christmas and birthdays. When it comes to school, children in foster care are generally 18 months behind academically. As they go from home to home to home and school to school to school, they fall further and further behind. And they struggle with reading and math skills. So we could provide backpacks filled with school supplies for these kids, or maybe backpacks filled with hygiene items. Because so many times when they come to our house, they just might have the clothes in their back and nothing else. So when a child arrives at my house at 10:30 at night and they've got nothing, I have to run out to the local 24-hour store an hour from my house and buy that toothpaste, toothbrush, comb, shampoo, deodorant, clothes, whatever it might be, hair moisturizer, things like that. So maybe we can provide hygiene items. For a small business owner, we could hire teenagers and youth in foster care and teach them important work skills. Those kids who age out of foster care or transition out of the system, statistics are very grim. 55% when they age out of the system will quit high school. 65% will end up homeless. 75% will end up unemployed. A tremendous number of girls will end up pregnant, and the cycle is repeating itself. So for these kids, they don't have any work skills. So we could teach them work skills. We could teach them living skills, social skills when we employ them. Those are just a few of the many ways. I do a deep dive in my book, The Church and Foster Care, on how to address this very same thing. How do we help those kids in our community where we live, maybe even our own neighborhoods, without have them live in our house?
I like just kind of comment on that. I like the one suggestion where you said that we should try and employ some foster kids and try and give them some of those skills. And I would imagine, especially since, they're coming in without those skills, it would require a tremendous amount of patience. Yes. But the beautiful thing about that is that you have the chance to actually mold, a person's work ethic for the future to come. So, you can, get after them and say, hey man, like, why don't you stock the shelves or whatever your business may be. And just kind of teaching them and being patient with them and, just being kind and saying, hey, this is how we do it around here. This is what's considered, good work ethic. Or, hey, we need to be honest here. Let's be honest to the, let's not steal stuff or whatever it may be. And I think, because that reminds me of, when I got my first job, that's when a lot of, work ethic, a lot of the skills that I have today that were instilled in me is when I got that first job. And now I'm doing things like this, and I think there's a lot of, it's part of the reason why I do this show is I think every person has something unique to contribute to this world.
Well, I don't think we're not only teaching them those type of skills, we're changing their life. Imagine if you own a restaurant or a bakery of some kind, and you employ somebody who is in the foster care system, they might develop not only are you teaching work skills, but they might develop a love of cooking and they might become a chef. It could set them a career path. Or you're teaching them skills on how to care for themselves. If you employ them, you're teaching them money management skills as well, so they can learn how to manage that money, which will help them as I said earlier, 65% will end up unemployed. Actually, up incarcerated, homeless on the streets. So you're teaching them those skills on how to take care of themselves.
And that's an important thing to do is to figure out how to. I mean, that's ultimately what we're all trying to do is. So just to kind of give you an idea, a lot of my audience, they're young and they're starting their careers. They're figuring out what the heck they want to do and stuff and what their lives may look like as well. And the sad reality is so, kind of what you were talking about. Most kids just don't have that opportunity to actually think about, oh, what's my career? They're just homeless and they're just like, hey, I just need to eat, man. And it reminds me of someone within my family was telling me, they're like, yeah, when you're hungry, most other things don't matter. Like all these things we get concerned with, when you're really like just starving and you're hungry, you don't care about some podcast, right? Or you don't care about what the latest stuff's going on in the news. All you care about is, hey, how do I get some food in me? Or how do I avoid this problem? That
the difference here, though, with these kids in foster care is these children, these youth, don't have anybody in their lives, because when they leave the foster care system, there is no mother or father or grandparent or aunt or uncle to call upon and say, hey, I got a flat tire, can you help come change it? I need a ride to job interview. I'm sick, can you bring me some chicken noodle soup? There's no one there for them. There's no support system for these teenagers when they leave the system. 6% will go to college. 2% will graduate with a four-year degree. I think that's a pretty strong statistic right there. I think it tells you these kids don't have a support system of any kind. That's why 75% of them end up incarcerated. There's no one to call for help when they are hungry, when they are homeless. You know, when I was 18 years of age, and perhaps with you, your family did not kick you out of the house. But for so many of those kids in foster care, when they're 18 years of age, they're on their own. And they're not past high school. You know, we talked about Sydney earlier. 20-something, she's 24 years of age. Not past ninth grade. That's the reality for so many of these kids.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around that. It is, man, it's so terrible. And I don't know. So one of the things I'm thinking of is, sometimes people, they like to think it's like, all right, how can we maybe prevent the problem from even to begin with? And I mean, kind of like you were talking about domestic abuse and some of those things like that. It is, I mean, it's been around for a while, but maybe how can we try and maybe stop that is, I guess, my question.
Well, if we see it, we need to speak up. You know, for so many, domestic violence happens within their own family. Maybe their sibling is doing it. Maybe their aunt, uncle is doing it. Maybe a friend of theirs is doing it. But they're afraid to speak up. They're embarrassed to speak up. They don't want to make a mistake or make somebody feel upset, or they might feel guilty. You know, what if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? So they don't speak up, and it just continues to happen. As I said earlier, you know, we discussed this, 5 million kids in America, domestic violence in their house, their own home, their own family. No one's speaking up for these children. And people know it's happening. They just are afraid to say anything about it. Human trafficking. People know it's happening, but it makes us feel uncomfortable, so we won't address it. We'll talk about politics, talk about sports, talk about entertainment, whatever it might be. Anything except the realities of what's happening to our children in our nation.
And yeah, that's, I like how you said some of those other things. We often try and find those distractions, right? To just, okay, yeah, I know there's problems, but maybe if I just distract myself long enough, then
it'll go away. It's really not happening.
Yeah, exactly. But the hard truth is, yes, this is happening, and how can we stop it? And I don't know. It's, and I like how you're, with the foster system and stuff, I think that's an opportunity to actually break the cycle, right? We have a chance to, yeah, these problems are happening now, but hey, these kids are eventually, like, as sad as it sounds, they're going to become as they're older, they're going to become potentially the abusers. And then, you know, and the system repeats, and that's just, and it's just really tough to hear that. And so with the foster care system, that's something where we can actually have that. It's a chance, right? It's a chance for us to actually try and break the cycle. And I think not enough people realize that that's the opportunity here, is we have a chance to actually break the cycle for a lot of people.
We have a chance to break the cycle. We have a chance to help a child heal. We have a chance to have a child trust, help a child succeed, help a child learn how to accept love. And at the same time, we have an opportunity to really enrich our own lives. Let me tell you, when I watch a child learn how to smile for the very first time, or a 4-year-old child learn how to laugh for the very first time, it's life-changing for me.
Oh my goodness. That, I can't even imagine, like, not even knowing how to smile or laugh.
Because of all the abuse. They've experienced horrific abuse, that unimaginable abuse that we won't address in our society. Again, it makes us feel uncomfortable, so we won't talk about it. Let's talk about the latest entertainment on Twitter, whatever it might be, in social media. I think back to a time, well, a few Christmases ago, we had over 20 people in our house, 20 kids come to our house who were part of our family. You know, that's an incredible reward for me and my family. And then talk about my own children. I have 6 children of my own. I've adopted 3. I don't know if any of them will ever be a foster parent, but I also firmly believe that every one of them is going to lead a life of serving others and helping others in some way, because they have lived and seen firsthand what abuse looks like, and they've learned to love their foster siblings, if you will. They're quick to stand up for bullying. They're quick to point out injustice to children. They're quick to stand up for their fellow peers who's being hurt in some fashion. And that's because they've had that experience of love to live with them. It's wonderful for me to watch when that child is placed into our home. My own kids quickly go over there, take them by the hand, and start playing. Play therapy is a remarkable thing. And that's because of what my own children are doing. So it's changed my whole family, I think, for a much better way. Are there times it's hard? Yes, to be sure, there are times when it's hard. But the rewards far outweigh the challenges.
That right there, that's it right there, is the challenges, they'll always come. That with anything you do, there's always going to be challenges. And the question is, are you willing to actually embrace those challenges in order to experience the rewards? And that, for you, obviously the answer was yes. And that's, again, it's so cool what you're doing. And the life, kind of a comment on with your kids, it reminded me when you were talking about that, how your kids like befriend people at school. Something my mother told me, she said, always try to find the kid that's alone, goes and tries and hides in the, like, on the stairs or whatever when they eat lunch alone, because those are the ones that really need the friends, that those are the people that need just someone that they can feel like actually is in their corner, that they can talk to and just have a conversation with, because they're, at the end of the day, they're people too. It's, yeah, I, one of these things I've kind of developed as well is, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you're the richest guy in the world, poorest or whatever. At the end of the day, we're all just people. Like, we have the same destination. We're all going to die one day. We all have the same outcome, what things are going to turn out. It's, why not do something that benefits everyone? And we're all going through.
Are you familiar with the starfish story?
What?
Are you familiar with the starfish story?
Uh-uh.
So there's a man, it's a very famous story, a man and a father and son are walking along the beach one morning. The night before, there's a tremendous storm, raging storm. Next morning, father and son are walking along the beach. The sun's just starting to come up. From one end of the beach to the other, it's littered with starfish. The waves crashing through the starfish on the beach. And as the sun is coming up, starfish are starting to heat up. They're starting to die. Well, the sun bends down and picks up a starfish and throws it in as far in the ocean as he can. Bends down to pick up another one and throws it as far as he can. Picks a third up and throws as far as he can in the ocean. He's doing this for some time. The father's just watching him. After a while, the father says, "Son, what are you doing? You can't save them all. It doesn't make a difference. Look, there are thousands of them. You can't make a difference." Son thinks about it. He stops. He bends down. He throws another one. And he says to his father, "Made a difference for that one." And that's what we're doing as foster parents. I can't save the world. You can't save the world. But for these children we bring into our homes, their world has changed.
And who knows what they'll do too, right? What the lives they're going to live. There's a book that I haven't read it. Someone else was telling me about it. And they talked about how, so they were talking about the generations of, you know, random acts that people did and how it impacted history. And the guy that was writing the book, he came up with some thing for, like, it helps food, you're able to produce it more of it. And it's not GMOs, not that stuff. He found a better way to, like, produce wheat. And he was looking back at his history, and he's like, "Man, how did I come to be? How did I get to where I am today?" He's like, who deserves the credit? And he's like, "Oh, my mom. My mom deserves the credit." And then he's like, "Well, who would my mom give the credit then to?" And then he just kept going. And it ended up, there was this, it went all the way back to this story of a slave and how at one point the person, like this mother, was carrying her child, and she just ran. She just handed this family baby and says, I'm being chased or whatever. And that child that grew up ended up being some guy that raised his father and then was, I'm forgetting the name. George Washington Carver, I think, something like that. And it was just like, what the crap? Like, and he just keeps telling stories like that where, yeah, you may not know, you know, the actions that you're doing. You may not know what's going to happen, but you may be enabling this person to go out and change millions of lives, this person to go out and change. But you were responsible for changing that one life, and that made all the difference. And that's, I think that's kind of what you were alluding to there. And it's important. Just live a life that's just be kind. And that, like, if I were to put it bluntly. So I'm going to try and ask the intelligent question of the day. We already kind of talked about how people can take action and, you know, how, you know, all that fun stuff. Maybe they're hearing us today and they're like, you know what? I'm just going to jump into this. I'm going to become a foster parent. How hard is it to actually become one? Because, like you said, there's some paperwork and some things that go behind that. Is it hard to become one? And if so, can we make it easier?
You don't have to be rich. You don't have to be married. You don't have the big house. You don't have to have a big house. You just have to have a desire to help children. People often ask me, you know, what would you suggest to somebody who wants to be a foster parent? And I say, the first thing you need to do, you must do, is you need to talk to your partner or your spouse, because you both have to be on board. Both have to be on board, committed, because it's life-changing, and you both have to rely upon each other to do it. I couldn't do foster parenting without my wife. Couldn't do foster parenting without my own kids. And then when everybody's in agreement, then you call up your child welfare agency and you go through, you ask to join the classes. You know, there's fingerprinting, there's background checks, that kind of thing. There's a number of classes you have to take. Because, you know, let's be honest, not everybody should be a foster parent. There are many people in our society who should not be a foster parent. That's why we have 5 million kids witnessing domestic violence where they live, in their family. So you have to, you've got to go through the training courses and had that background check to be accepted as a foster parent, to get licensed as a foster parent. And then you just wait for that first phone call to change your life.
There you go. And when you say license, do you have to renew that then?
You do. It's a great question. So every state has, there's 50 different states. That means there's 50 different ways of doing foster care. It's not the same in every state. Every state has different requirements in regards to how many hours of training you need to have every single year to continue to keep your house opened as a licensed foster care home.
Gotcha. That's okay. Sweet. Thank you. That probably helps answer a question for some of the people that may be looking into this. So, Dr. DeGarmo, thank you for coming on today. I know I learned a lot. Like I said, I came in pretty blind to all this, and I learned a lot. And I know the audience did as well. So thank you for taking the time to come on today. If I know you mentioned your books, I know you can be found on social media, website, all that fun stuff. What's the best way people can A, find you, reach out to you, find your books, whatever
Sure,
it may
go to
be?
the foster, if you type in, if you go online searching for the Foster Care Institute, the Foster Care Institute, or Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert. I'll come up, you talk about the books. I have several books, but if someone's considering becoming a foster parenting and want to know what it's really like, I would suggest my memoir, Fostering Love, One Foster Parent's Journey. I don't sugarcoat it. I talk about what it's really like having these children in your home. The joys, the challenges, the triumphs, the failures, the heartbreak, the life-changing moments. I think that's a real good insight into what's being a foster parent. If you're a person of faith, the book Faith in Foster Care is one as well. But a quick search online, the Foster Care Institute or Dr. John DeGarmo, Foster Care Expert.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on today. I appreciate you taking the time to share this with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, everyone. As you can tell, that is Dr. John DeGarmo. He's a very intelligent person, has great things to share. I challenge you guys, if anything spoke to you guys today, to reach out to him or to find him, and he dropped the information there for you guys. Stay tuned till next week. We have a great guest lined up for you guys. See you guys next week, and let's get after it. Hey everyone, if you liked this episode and would like to hear more, be sure to hit that subscribe or follow button. We release a new episode every Wednesday for you guys to listen to. Thank you guys so much for the support that you give. We could not have done this without you guys. If you would like to be a potential guest on the show, check out intelligentconvos.com and fill out the form there. Thank you guys again, and let's get after it.